What's up, guys? Welcome to this week's episode of the Friday Sessions with the Boys. This one, as always, ended in hysterics. But this week was kind of interesting. I talked about my recent trip to London. I talked about some big opportunities that are coming out of the ether as a result of being there and showing up for years and years and years. And more recently, here on the pod, and Eric revealed some pretty incredible data. Among the data points, over 2 million views of our content just in the last 30 days. But we talk about how that happened, where it came from. Further than that, we talked about a news article this week on Sky talking about programmable money coming into Australia, how it's already started, and how our Reserve Bank was one of the first to volunteer. And we share some terrifying data and how that's going to impact you as a citizen of the country. We also talked about another news article that came out this week, which is the CEO of BlackRock talking about how AI is not coming for trades, which was very interesting. And then we talked about another famous Australian that we recently had on the pod and his thoughts about the future of the country. And we finished up just having a riff amongst ourselves because I asked the boys, you guys have got kids, what are you teaching your kids or what are you going to be putting your kids into in the AI-powered future? Where are the opportunities? How do we need to think about that? It was a very interesting discussion. I think you're going to love it. With that said, like, subscribe, and comment. Remember, hit that subscribe button. Many people don't realize that they're not actually subscribed and they miss content. That's the number one thing you can do to help the channel if you enjoy these discussions. Thanks for watching. We'll see you on the flip side. Well, guys, I am back in Cyprus after spending the weekend in a rainy London. I got to say, it was so good to be back in London. I went up there to see the Usyk fight, which was incredible. And, man, it was so good. So good to be back in the big city. You guys have been to London, right?
No.
Yeah, London's awesome. London has changed so much over the last 10 years. I remember going there, I don't know, like whenever it was, early to mid noughties, and you couldn't get more than a burger and chips, right? And now the quality of restaurants, quality of shopping. I mean, London, UK's got its problems, don't get me wrong, but London CBD and the nice areas are pretty good.
Yeah. You think about a lot of the top three restaurants in the world. A lot of them are in London. A lot of it's like the food over there. My brother used to work up there for some of the best, Ramsay, all those guys like that. And he had a field day over there. It's like any city though, right? You've got your shitholes, you've got your areas you just don't go to, and there's places that are just fantastic. Same as Gold Coast, same as Sydney, same as Brisbane.
I can strongly recommend, guys, if you want to put something fun on your bucket list, go to Wembley Stadium and see a heavyweight title fight. It was absolutely insane. Like, I bought the tickets last minute. I was ringside, and it's open air. And so you walk Wembley, and it's like just 100. I don't know how many people are in there, but I'm guessing 100,000 people, all British. They love a drink, just going absolutely bananas. And there was Jake Paul right there, and you know, Jason Statham and Gordon Ramsay.
No way.
It's like right there, sitting by the ring. And the energy was absolutely amazing. Such a good event. So worth doing.
You know what's cool about that? Is that they're all doing pods this week and going, man, everyone was there. Adam Hudson was there. You know,
any hugging the PA?
Oh god.
Oh fuck.
Isn't that Andy Warren? Andy fucking Warren.
Didn't that guy just take the internet wins again?
Oh my god! Have you said there's a new term in the Oxford Dictionary? It's called cold-played. You got cold-played.
He wrote the resignation, but I'm sure it was on the back of being pushed pretty hard.
It was funny because I seen a meme and it said that. You know, Coldplay hasn't made a single for years, and he made two in one night.
Cool. Now, every sporting event, everywhere that there's a big screen, they're doing Coldplay cam now. It's just incredible marketing.
Just the memes are blown. On here, it's blown up to every.
It's incredible.
Yeah,
absolutely incredible. So moving on, guys, a few things this week. I got a bit of a cool announcement to make at the start. So I got contacted this week out of the blue by Nomad Capitalists, which is pretty exciting. And I'm going to be speaking up at Kuala Lumpur at their annual event with Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple, and Andrew, the founder of Nomad Capitalist, which is going to be really, really good. So I'm really excited to go do that. And I sort of got last minute call up because they needed a Bitcoin speaker, and Safedean had to cancel last minute. So I'm actually taking his speaking spot, which is pretty crazy. So yeah, so I'm going to be there I think it's in September, which is exciting.
No pressure.
I mean, only the guy who wrote the Bitcoin standard. I mean, what can go wrong, Adam?
Like, I saw the brief for like what he was supposed to be talking about, and I was like, can I modify this? This is not really my wheelhouse. Like, he's like so smart. So I'm going to
we'll send you the unemployable jacket, hat, and pants.
It's interesting because I last week here in Limassol in Cyprus, I was the keynote for their Bitcoin meetup. They have a Bitcoin meetup here every couple of months, and it was the first time I'd spoken here, and so it was a very different crowd. So imagine I'm in a room in Limassol overlooking the ocean, and it's all Europeans, and so all my jokes are just completely falling flat. They think nothing of speaking up in the middle of your talk going, yes, but what about this? And they speak to you that Russian accent, right? Like,
what's this joke what off duck's back?
Did they not get the entry exit sort of joke? I mean, that's pretty universal, right?
Dude, like, honestly, I was dying. Like, all my jokes and everything, they're just very serious people, you know, because they come from a lot of Russians and different things. It was an interesting night. So I spoke there and hung out there for a few hours, and then the next day I got there. So I'm actually going to be talking about real estate and Bitcoin at the Nomad Capitalist event, which is going to be really, really cool. So moving on, let's get into the ticket for the week. We've got a bunch of good stuff to talk about this week. One story, actually, that I thought we'd kick off with. We've got a lot to go in, but I wanted to read this to you guys because I don't know if you saw the story on just while we're starting on Bitcoin. I don't want to stick on Bitcoin. There's a lot to cover, but this article in Sky News this week, the headline is Money That Can Expire. The RBA is laying groundwork for a dystopian financial reality where money is given a brain and then the switch is handed to somebody else. I don't know if you've read this story on Sky. Uh-huh. And it's really interesting talking about how the Reserve Bank of Australia has signed up, and it's called trial with the Bank for International Settlements. So the Bank of International Settlements sits above all the Federal Reserves around the world. It's the peak banking body, and they're basically in trials right now for this programmable money. And we've heard it coming for a while, but Australia apparently was first to sign up, or among the first to sign up. And it fundamentally gives the government the ability to control money in all kinds of ways, what you can spend it on, where you can spend it, and an expiration date on the money itself. So, for example, you can spend this money. It's central bank digital currency, but this article does an incredible job. Yeah, that's what it is, central bank digital currency. But it literally, the money is good to be spent in Sydney, but not in Perth. It can be spent on this, but not on that. If you don't, and they're using things like using it for stimulus. So if you don't use it within 30 days and stimulate the economy, the money expires. Taxes happen in real time. So no more tax returns. They just take it immediately. It's absolutely horrifying when you start to think about the fact that you can invest your time and your life into something, and then you're given this token that is absolutely centralized and controlled in every single programmable way. It's a really interesting story. We'll give the link to Jerome to pop in the comments.
This has been the dystopian argument with cryptocurrency since day dot, right? Like did they mention the phrase central bank digital currency? Because effectively,
that's
what it is. And of course, Australia would be the first country to implement something like that. So basically, what that's going to mean is helicopter money, right? That's effectively helicopter money en masse, right? And you know, your first impression would be to think, oh, that's great, we're going to be given money or stimulus. But that's if you know anything about economics, it's just going to widen the gap between the rich and the poor, because the rich are going to go out and flee these jurisdictions and make more money, and the poor are going to wait for these handouts, and they're going to basically be able to track every single dollar that you spend.
This is the part that I just wanted to read to people here. It says here, the RBA's digital currency trial began last year. Since then, it has collaborated with international financial bodies and tech firms to explore what may soon become the foundation of the new global monetary system, a system where money itself becomes a tool of policy enforcement. None of this has emerged in isolation. This is not an isolated project. It's part of a larger trend, a slow, deliberate expansion of regulatory power that has taken shape over the past decade. Behind the scenes, Australia's financial regulators have been building the scaffolding quietly, incrementally, with no fanfare, just a steady layering of oversight, compliance and surveillance. Anti-money laundering reforms, digital asset frameworks, know your customer mandates, real-time transaction monitoring, rules that in isolation sound reasonable, even necessary, but in aggregate, they form the machinery of a system capable of managing a national economy in real time, a system where intervention is no longer occasional. It's constant, silent, automatic, built into the fabric of the transaction itself. That's how systemic change happens in a country like Australia. Such a powerful article really think people need to listen to.
So this is the bear. This is important, Adam, because this is also the bear case for Bitcoin, right? Like at the end of the day, I don't worry about quantum, because if quantum can hack Bitcoin, it can hack everything else. Right. Mm-hmm. I don't worry about like governments trying to like ban it because the game theory suggests that other people will adopt it, etc. But the one thing that I worry about, and I've been worried about this for like last 12 to 18 months, and I just heard Saylor on a recent interview say the same thing, that he thinks this is the bear case. The bear case is if we go through a regime shift where we start to have sweeping socialist policy like this, and economies become more and more and more controlled to the point where they're completely controlled. Like a CBDC, central bank digital currency, gives ultimate control to the central bank and the government to control the whole economy, right? And if that is, in actual fact, the bear case to Bitcoin, if all across the West countries start adopting this kind of CBDC, and that's why it's been such a big thing in the US. This is kind of worrying stuff, I think.
It'll be interesting to see how that flies and whether people march in the streets over this, because
not in this country, because they won't understand it.
Yeah. They'll march on the streets for a lot of other stuff, but they won't march on the street for that.
But they won't march on the streets for this, because it's like in COVID when we forcefully locked you in your homes and gave you 9 p.m. curfews. It was okay, because one hand they were doing that, and the other hand they were giving stimmy. And so this is going to be targeted stimmy, not, you know, and so people can be like, oh, this is great. And so this, you know, like this is just another.
Ross Cameron said yesterday, he said you won't even know it, because they'll be spending $50 million a month on PR, making that it's a good thing, like the COVID advertising to all stay inside. So you'd be completely conditioned to it to start with.
Talk about that, James. You guys had a pod this week with Ross Cameron. So for those of you who don't know who Ross is, he had some thoughts. So Ross has been one of the most well-known commentators.
Worked under Peter Costello,
in
Treasury under the Howard government.
Mark, you probably got a bit of a recollection, or a bit more articulate in describing how his sort of take on. I think the question was from Eric. What would you do if your 30-year-old self, knowing what you know now? And it certainly wasn't fucking pro Australia, that's for sure. So,
like, Mark, the summation was basically to make sure that you have some money invested outside of Australia.
Money
and a second passport.
And he's basically president of the Libertarian Party now. I think the writing is kind of on the wall.
Isn't that fascinating that a guy that worked under Costello and Howard at that level of government you know, like for 8 years, like to go, first of all, to go into politics at that level, there's got to be some degree of love for the country, because you're certainly not doing it for the money, right? Like, so isn't that alarming that somebody say that?
One sharp cat too. Like, it was a very, very sharp, interesting to sit there for the first 30, 40 minutes. Whoever watches that pod, don't get lost and think it's just a history lesson. And it all tied in at the end. It was like, whoa, this bloke is pretty sharp. But yeah, he certainly, his message was reminiscent of Andy Schumlow's, that's for sure. At about the big four, about the, without the too much of the sensationalism behind it.
Yeah, and we asked him the question directly. We're like, you know, you've got the global debt cycle, you've got the divide between the rich and the poor, you've got everything that we've been talking about for the last 12 months that we face as a nation, like issues that we faced in the Western world, declining demographics, everything. And we basically asked him, you know, what percentage chance do you give Australia of turning it around? And he said a 5% chance.
Whoa.
Right? Like, yeah. He's like, at best, right? He's like we've been saying recently, it's basically written, right? We have to go through this cycle and see more pain before things will change. He did say one thing. He said, and I think it was James who asked the question. I think James asked, what would it take for Australians to stand up and riot? Or Eric asked one of you guys riot. And he basically said, rolling blackouts.
Yeah.
He said, power. That's power blackouts would be the thing.
It was quite an interesting interview. And we got talking about certain topics off camera as well after, even when you guys left. I was talking to him for a little bit, and he was asking about the pod and, you know, the type of people that watch and stuff like that. And I want to make sure that, you know, with Unemployable and where we're going with this pod, because we've had some commentary around like, oh, I feel, you know, like the pod is, you know, bashing Australia. We're not trying to bash Australia here, right? We're trying to educate Australians on some of these policies and some of these capital controls and just the things that are happening deeply right in this country. And I mentioned on the pod that, you know, I've been here 18 years now, and Australia has been very, very good to me. It's been very, very good to my family. It's been very good to you guys, right? But things are changing, right? There's a lot of things that are changing. And now there's, you know, articles coming out, and I want to read something, and I read it on that pod, but I want to read it here as well, because this will hit home to a lot of people. And it was an article on news.com, and they're a family, an influencer family. And the podcast started by saying, the article started by saying, we're done, right? And basically this family is leaving Australia. And I'm going to read a part of this, so that way it kind of, I read it and it really hit home. So it said, Australia will always be home, but it's no longer where we're meant to grow and raise our children. Because when you're taxed to the eyeballs, no matter how much you make or write off, slammed by the rising cost of living, no matter what state you live in, crushed by the weight of tall poppy syndrome, if you dare to dream bigger, seeing policies and laws changes faster than you can adapt, watching our city struggle to keep up with decisions that we didn't vote for, watching systems shape your kids in ways you didn't choose, and watching opportunity for entrepreneurs and getting smaller, not greater. You realize you can either stay silent and conform or do what's best and make a move, and we chose to make a move. I don't remember seeing these articles before. I don't know if you guys remember seeing these types of articles in news.com and Sky and, you know, Gold Coast Bulletin and Sydney Herald and things like that, but this is becoming a thing, right? And what happens is when mainstream media sees these types of things and reads these articles, people kind of like have an awakening. You go, holy shit, you know, like they start talking about it, and then they start, you know, talking about it with their partner. They start making plans. Next thing you know, 6, 12, 18 months, they leave. And to me, this isn't about bashing Australia. This is the reality of what's happening in our country right now.
It's sad.
It is so sad, right? Because, like, I don't want to leave. as much as I, you know, oh, Dubai and this and that, and we're going to be going there in the next few months to check things out. But like, there's something inside of me that is just like, it's such a good country. There's so many good things going for it. But I said something off camera and he's like, you should have said it on camera. And this will probably piss a lot of people off. But for people that want to do better in life, right? For the entrepreneurs, for the people that want more, Australia is becoming a country that's making it very, very, very difficult for us unemployables. But I think it's an amazing country if you want to lead a mediocre life, because you've got the beaches and you've got the safety and you've got the clean air. And if you don't want much, right, it's an amazing country. But if you want to take things to the next level and provide, right, something for your family that they can take, you know, with them beyond our years, is becoming more and more difficult.
Yeah.
And just so you know,
we're not saying that you can't be successful in Australia, right? Like, I think the four of us would all agree that this is one of the best places to become successful, but on mass, generally speaking, it's becoming harder for the majority of people to become successful, right? Like, the opportunities have never been so abundant, but also the obstacles have never been so getting so difficult as well, right? Like, it's just
Well, I'll give you an example, right? Now, we little things, right? Like, little things. Yeah, you've got the taxes and that type of thing, but you don't even know.
They're not little. Just
Well, yeah. But you don't know this yet, Adam, right? But and this is real life scenario. Like, we are on the ball with our accounting and our books, and you know, like we're quite organized. But for whatever reason, right, there was a superannuation for a few employees that we had that got paid, but didn't get paid by the due date for whatever reason, slipped through the cracks. You know, things get busy. I get an email from the accountant, and he's like, "Hey, so there's this super SGC, super guarantee contribution, something like that. You know, just so you guys know, you need to pay this fee." And it was like $900 and something. And I'm like, "So what is this for?" Or because you didn't pay the superannuation on time. And I'm like, "But like, how long was it out by?" And it was such a short period of time, right? And he goes, "This is a new thing now that we need to do, and I recommend you nipping this in the butt now, because what happens is you don't get alerted on it, right? And then what happens is it just stays on the account. Next thing you know, 4 years later, you get this fee by going, and it compounds over time." Like, just that in itself, right, is just another $900 that I don't get to spend, Adam doesn't get to spend, we don't get to spend, right, to make this a better podcast. There's a lot better ways we could be spending that money. And it's just these little things that creep in. I've been in business 18 years here. I never heard of this before.
What were you going to say, James?
I just wanted to side comment just to compliment what Eric said before, because sometimes, you know, this pod isn't about bashing Australians. Sometimes we're all on WhatsApp chats. It can potentially feel like maybe you're in a bit of an echo chamber, but when you get politicians on that are echoing the same sentiment, you get news.com articles, it's sort of, you know, it's just to Eric's point, it's not us just sitting here bashing the country.
That's the other thing he said. That's the other thing he said as well. And he, like, to his credit, he didn't promote the Libertarian Party or his political agenda or party for the whole hour and 45 minutes. He was just having like a mate to mate, like he was just having a conversation about the stuff that he enjoys talking about, right? And so he wasn't trying to promote his party or get it. Like, and the other thing that he said was the school system. He goes, I would think long and hard about sending your kids into private or public schools within Australia. He said,
because I guess like they're like indoctrinated, right?
The kids are being indoctrinated, and he kind of agreed with what we've spoken about a lot, that, you know, critical thinking and teaching your kids to be able to think look, I think that's the point that Eric you're trying to make, right? If you put a bow on it, the purpose of this pod is to help the listener and us, that's why we have these conversations with each other, to think a little bit more critically about what's going on, so then we can make decisions that better help us serve ourselves and our families, right? That's the goal. And I think these conversations need to be had in order to practice that critical thinking.
Adam?
Yeah, you are right. It's in the mainstream thought now. And I think it's a good thing because, ultimately it's going to cause, I agree with Mark and when you guys talked about, the country needs to go through more pain, when you talked with Shumla about Australians need more pain, it sounds terrible to say that because I know a lot of Australians are hurting, but we are going to see quite a bit of exodus, I think, if this keeps up. I got met two DMs this week, one from quite a famous Australian. I won't say who she is, but everyone would know her. And she DM me and say, I love the pod, love what you guys are talking about. I left Australia, I'm not going back. It's just a hot mess. And it was really interesting to just out of the blue hear from someone like that who's also relocated outside for the same reasons we talk about. But then to offer a little bit of balance, I also got a DM from another woman who is a very successful businesswoman in Australia. And she said, I know them and her husband's a famous sportsman. And they're very well set up and they make a lot of money and they got the Lamborghinis and everything, all that stuff. I said, I look at the tax bills every month and da 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 da. And I said, she goes, I want to talk to you about it. I said, look, life is more than a tax bill. Your kids are there, your kids are grown. Like it's not just a case of like moving. Like if you're just going to move somewhere for tax, it's not the reason. A lot of times people do look over the blue horizon and they just see that it's all beer and Skittles in the other place. It's so different. And I don't have kids. Yeah. I don't have that stuff that a lot of people have. And Australia offers an unrivaled quality of life and safety for kids. Like what you're doing, Eric, with your kids and seeing you in those beautiful fields by the ocean with V at the soccer, it's not the same if you were here. I'm telling you that right now. Like, you're not going to. It's just the quality of life is unrivaled and it is incredible. And it's not like you get nothing for your taxes. It depends so much on the person and the family. So,
Adam, balance, like you would probably agree that the reason that you left Australia wasn't through fear, right? Like we don't want anyone listening to be motivated by fear of paying taxes or by fear of what's happening to the country. That is not the reason to leave a country. And the guest actually he spoke about that. He goes you need to make sure that the reason for you leaving a problem is not to escape the problem, right? And but if you're inspired or motivated to do something a little bit special, like Eric said, to have something extraordinary, that's the kind of example or situation that we're saying, hey, maybe consider what else is out there, right? Like it's not something to be considering through fear, through motivation of fear.
Absolutely. You got to do it for the right reason. So moving on from that, first of all, Mark, just want to give your shout out, 1,000 subs on your channel this week on YouTube.
Thank you,
congratulations,
guys.
Man.
So many actually reach out and say that they watch the pod and they watch the Unemployable pod as well. And it's great. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. You're doing great work over there. The results speaking for themselves, which is great to see. And such an interesting thing you're doing, the public 10K challenge. What's the status? Up 74% or something in 3 weeks or something?
We've come back a bit. So we were up 72%. I think now we're up about 56 or 59. So the last couple of days have been negative trading days, but that's what happens. You go up some days, you go down others.
You went from steak to chicken overnight.
I'll be working at Macca's soon enough.
the other way it's called the penthouse to the shit house.
So there was an interesting story, Eric, out this week that you wanted to talk about, which I think is an interesting one, which was the CEO of BlackRock came out and gave his thoughts on AI. So maybe you could just give us the high level of like what that article was. It caught traction online. I've got some thoughts about it, but I'd love to hear your thoughts. So give the audience the lowdown on this.
Yeah, I'll bring it back up now. So basically I seen this on Instagram and it was the CEO of BlackRock that came out and was talking about, AI is coming for, the coders, not the electricians and welders as an example, right? Not the trades. And in the US right now, from what he was saying, they need over 500,000 electricians over the next few years, right? So there's a massive wealth shift coming. And I've been saying this for a while, and I got smashed with an article. I don't know if you guys, well, obviously you guys would remember, but for anyone that didn't see that article or that podcast, I basically said that, you know, the trades, you know, plumbers and electricians are the new doctors and lawyers, and news.com got on the article and the rest of it. And this article that just came out is the perfect example of what I was trying to say earlier. So in the next 3 years, just in the US, based on what Mike Rowe is saying, is that they need 550,000 plumbers, 410,000 welders, and 100,000 HVAC techs, just out of those, you know, three industries as an example. So, and I'll tell you right now, Australia won't be, like, other than probably percentages, obviously, because we don't have as many people, wouldn't probably be far off, right, in regards to we need more tradesmen. So what he was saying is a lot of people straight away are like, well, I don't want to be a plumber, or I don't want to be an electrician, or I don't want to be a welder. But for the people out there that are thinking for side hustles or starting businesses or how to collab or how to create strategic alliances, is what kind of superpowers that you have to actually go out and partner with these types of businesses. I've got friends that are in these types of businesses. They've got maintenance plumbing business, they got maintenance electrical businesses, and majority of them, right, are not tech savvy. Majority of them came from being a plumber on the tools, then all of a sudden buy another truck and get another, tradesman on board. And next thing you know, there's three, and next thing you know, there's four. And usually, you know, they're just running off one app and doing the same thing that they've been doing for the last 10, 15, 20 years. And they make good money doing it. But if you're one of those people that has that skill, that has a marketing skill, that can implement AI, that can implement marketing, right? Ads, sales funnels, flows, you can help a lot of these types of businesses. And in the same article, it's saying now that 70% of home services are now purchased or booked online, which is massive, right? Like, not long ago, I remember, you know, the yellow book being this big, you know, like the yellow pages, like the yellow pages is gone now, it's online. So
Eric, do you believe that narrative? Like, I watched him talk and he said, you know, the AI is not coming for plumbers, not coming for HVAC dudes. It's not coming for HVAC for Aussies, means air conditioning, right?
Yeah.
It's not coming for these guys. Well, I disagree. I mean, robots are already doing brain surgery. So if robots can do brain surgery, surely they can unblock a drain, right? Yeah. Like, is it really true? Like, it makes for a good meme, but yeah. I think it's definitely coming.
I don't think any job is safe, right? But one thing that we have, right, is in what time frame, right? Oh. So, you know, for someone to go, hey, you know, you have a marketing business and you're going to be able to run ads now without the person, and you can have AI. Hey, you can have AI now cut clips, not a physical person. That stuff's but like
ten,
now.
Ten it's years, happening, 10
right?
years?
But in 10 years, that's what I'm saying, right? But now, is you know, a plumber going to be replaced in the next 12 to 18 to 24 months? In my opinion, no, right? But then at the same time, we're oblivious here in Australia because we live, again, within the 5 to 10 kilometer radius of what we see and where we live. And then I got, you know, friends, you know, that we're all friends with, Chris as an example, that just moved to Texas, and he's just cruising around in the driverless taxis there. And I'm just like, what? Like, it looks fake, but that's how people are living there in their 5 and 10 kilometer radiuses. So it actually is happening quicker than what we all think. And I think Australia is always going to be slower on the adoption just because of how far we are and the lack of population we have.
Yeah, I was with the builder on Saturday, and he's a pretty savvy type of guy. And we're talking about exactly this, AI disrupting manual labor roles effectively, and it's been, like, you know, potentially what we're talking about here is a plumber for existing buildings going to be a bit more difficult, old, you know, shacks that you have to dig around with a crowbar and dig out to fix a broken pipe, you know, that's probably a regular maintenance sort of role. But, you know, for new fabrication, he showed me a video, and I've seen it once before, about all your walls, all your battening, all your gyprocking, all coming down, all prefabbed. I mean, automatically, not one person on the factory floor at all, and you've got all your walls for, like, in a kit, packed, ready to go for your desired house. when you look at it and go, okay, well, I mean, the thing that made it, then there's going to be a remote, a driverless forklift that'll pick it up and pack it into a driverless truck that'll drop it off at site. It'll get assembled by a, you know, a non-human operated AI-driven robotics. I mean, they're already pouring concrete houses in a day, if you watch that. So, look, from a new build perspective, I think it's going to get disrupted pretty quick. When I say quick, you know, again, look at that timeline. Is it 12 months? Probably not. Is it 5 years? Definitely. But, again, not in that secondary service stuff.
What I'm thinking about is Frankie, right? Like, I think about Mark's daughter. What is she going to study? Like, what job is she going to do?
Engineering. Like, I want her to get involved in engineering. I think engineers and artists will control the future.
So what do you mean by engineers and artists? There's lots of different types of engineers. So give us an example in your brain, what you're thinking. What is it going to look like?
The most sought after staff or resources or team members at the moment, if you look at like Google and Apple and Tesla and SpaceX, are engineers, right? Whether it be computer engineers, whether it be mechanical engineers, if AI and robots are going to control the future, then these AI and robots are going to need software engineers, they're going to need mechanical engineers. You want to be the engineer to the thing that's going to run the world.
Or is it a case that the AI will be its own engineer to run the world? I mean, is there a misstep there completely where humans are taken out of that frame?
But that's then a deeper discussion, right? And it's like, once we don't have to do anything anymore, what do we do? Like, what do we do for meaning once we no longer have to do anything? But I spoke to the boys about this yesterday, but I'd love to kind of send Frankie to Elon Musk's school in Austin at Astra, where they basically teach them how to think critically. They teach them how to think in first principles and second principles. So, you know, example of first principles is, if a rocket costs $300 million to put together, what is the price of the rocket at its core components? So at its core materials, what is the cost at market rate of those core materials? And that might be $50 million. And then the answer is, well, how do we make that rocket for cheaper based on those first principles? So something that thinks along those lines, I think, you know, it doesn't matter what we do, right? Like there's if humans are to continue to exist, whether it's here on Earth or on other planets, we're going to try and expand and we're going to try and mark our territory. There's going to be communities that we need to develop and build. Now, they might not be here on Earth. They might be in Mars or some other planet, but we're going to want to continue to build community if we want to continue to survive.
It's that time of year again at Unemployable, where we're opening up our Unemployable business coaching program. It's over a 12-month period, and with that, you get private one-on-one coaching, group coaching, as well as private and live events throughout the year. You could get private coaching with me, and not only me, but our panel of experts that we have put together. These panel of experts have been in our network and are the exact people that we use in our business successes. People from branding, sales, marketing, our lawyers, our accountants, everyone that has helped build our businesses, you have access to. If this sounds of interest, go to www.unemployable.com.au/coaching and register your interest to see if it's a fit for you and us. Hope to see you there.
I think it's a really, really worthy discussion, because a lot of people listening to this, and you two of us here have kids, but where is the future for the kids? And, you know, that I think that critical thinking piece is very, very important. Like, if you study Peter Diamandis's X Prize that he's put together, that's quite a fascinating thing when you go down that rabbit hole, like, and Elon's approach there, like when he was building the rocket for SpaceX, he had that great story of the radio that communicates with the Earth. And they rang NASA and said, how much is a radio? And they said, oh, it's like $9 million or something. And Elon turned around and had this kid who was like an engineer. And he got him in and said, I want you to design a, you know, it does this. It has to have this function. It has to compete with this radio. And he didn't tell the kid how much NASA had quoted for it. And he said, all right, what's the budget? And Elon said, 10 grand. And the kid actually made it better than the NASA radio. And now NASA orders them off Elon. And it went from 9 million to 10 grand. Don't comment on the numbers, but it was that of number gap.
Yeah.
Eric, you were going to say something there? Because this is a really interesting discussion.
I don't know if I mentioned it to you guys. I mentioned it to someone else before. I don't know if it was on the pod or just in passing. But that word, those words, critical thinking, right? Like it's something that most of us don't do enough of, right? Like I'll give you an example. I was talking to my business partner in another business, and he's probably one of the most intelligent, smartest guys that I get to deal with on a day-to-day basis. Not to say that you guys aren't smart, but he's just intellectually on another level. And this is like literally 9 o'clock at night, and I messaged him about something, and he sends me a photo back of him in bed doing Sudoku. That is it, Sudoku? I think it is that number. That's a number game.
You can see how smart I am. I've never heard of it.
No, so it's this high level kind of numbers. You know, it's a book, and anyways, high level. And he goes, oh, I'm doing like very high level Sudoku right now, and I'm like, he's like, it's good. It's very, very good for critical thinking, right? Ooh. With some of the decisions that need to be made. And I'm just thinking to myself, I'm like, that's what sets some people apart. You know what I mean? Like there's a reason why the guy is very successful and highly, highly intelligent. Meanwhile, most of us are going, okay, I'll read a book and, you know, put on Netflix as an example, or listen to a podcast, which is great. But majority of people will listen to a podcast, right, while they're cooking, while they're driving, and go, oh my God, that was such amazing information. They'll never go back to it. They'll never document it. They won't take notes down. They won't then put it into chat GPT and then ask it, how can this affect my life? How can I implement this? Like that's critical thinking. Like in my eyes, it's really thinking about those problems and how it can better your life. And then even me at times, I'm doing nowhere near the level of what I need to be doing from a critical thinking perspective. Because I think a lot of us are in these, you know, fight or flight moments of just chasing the next business or chasing the next deal or putting out the next fire, and then 5 years goes by. Meanwhile, you got someone like that that's, you know, working on that critical thinking and actually going, okay, what problems do I actually need to solve? Because the reality is this, the bigger the problem you solve, the bigger the payout. You know, I was at a networking event on last week, and I got to meet the founder of, you guys probably all have the app on your phone in Australia. There's 12 million of you guys that actually have it, and it's called Hot Doc. So it's basically the app that you book for all your doctor's appointments. Well, the founder of it was there, right? And, you know, I did some research on it. You know, it's about a $200 million valuation at the moment and growing. And I was just talking to this guy, and you could just tell that he was just a problem solver, right? Like he's a tech guy, but you could tell he was just that problem solver. And we then, like people like me, I'm not so much a problem solver. I'm more of a connector to find the problem solver and then put people together and then create something out of it. And I think what you got to do is realize who you are, right, in that space. Because will I ever be the guy that'll sit there realistically at night and do high level Sudoku? Probably fucking not, right? And that's okay too. But in my opinion, is you got to find out what your superpower is and embrace that. But in regards to where the world is going, I think about this all the time, Adam, right? I look at my kids, and I'm not one that pressures my kids, okay? You have to go to uni. You got to do this. You got to do that. You know, we got them in a very non-conforming type of school. You know, it's a Montessori type of school, so it's not traditional. They embrace, you know, different ways of learning and stuff like that. So we're quite non-traditional in that way. Whereas you get some parents that are like, you have to do this, you have to do that, you have to do this. And I don't agree. I don't agree with that. Like, I don't agree unless you want to go be a vet or you want to be a doctor or you want to be, you know, a lawyer. But again, even these trades now, lawyers, like I'm literally got a message today from someone, right? Actually, he posted on Instagram with a business idea asking, hey, does anyone know a lawyer, a property lawyer? I've got a business idea. And I messaged him going, hey, what are you actually looking for? And he told me the business idea. I'm like, mate,
What a great idea that is solving a massive problem, and it'll all be fully automated. You know, like the lawyer won't, he's like, literally the lawyer will have to do 100 hours worth of work at the beginning and then probably not touch it ever again. Like that's,
I think,
that's
cool. You know, the answer to what I'm thinking about is under the, under our caps here, right? Because I've said this for a while, idea, capital, execution, that's how the business world works. There's three components. Somebody's got to have the idea, somebody's got the capital, and somebody's got the execution. And I think what you're saying in a nutshell is, Eric, is know where your competency lies, because those are the only three ways you can participate in that game. And I am, after many years of trying to be in business, I've only had a couple of good ideas, and I've had a lot of shit ones. So I'm not that good at the ideas. I was lucky to get a couple of good ones that got away. But most people, you're lucky to have one good idea that actually turns into anything in your lifetime. Eric, you've had MX Store, and you were sort of in that, but you were sort of the capital piece of that and partly execution, but you had partners that were great at the execution. Correct. So you sort of you found your way in that little triangle of sort of being partly the money, partly the mentorship, and it was their idea. So their idea, your money, and their you and them execute. So you got to find your own way. And where I'm landing more and more now is I'm moving into the capital side. Mark is in the capital side, whether it's backing entrepreneurs or just finding really smart people or learning how capital markets work. So Mark and I are living there. James is still executing and ideas at the moment, and he'll move more. So we're all, if you observe it as a listener, it's sort of like what Robert Kiyosaki talked about. We've got the cash flow quadrant, and you sort of figure out, you end up being an investor if you're lucky, right? But most of us suck in the business owner part. I guess what I'm saying is I really like this idea of critical thinking for people, because I really, really believe as we move into the future, it is either going to be the people who critically think that are going to succeed in business, or the people that finance or get involved somehow in backing those people that critically think. Well, it's either those two things.
And it's becoming really good. Like when, you know, people ask me, oh, like, so what do you do? Or what are you good at? Or, you know, like, and I think to myself, I'm like, what actually am I good at? Right. And the people close to me will know, right. I'm very, very good.
We've been wondering the same thing.
Right. I'm very good at connecting and putting the pieces of the puzzle together. Right. And talking a bit of shit from time to time. Right.
So you do jigsaw puzzles?
Yeah. They're really, really tiny ones.
That's what the Russians would say. So you do jigsaw puzzle?
2,000 piece minimum. Right. And I'll give you two examples of this that happened in the last 24 hours. Mm-hmm. So I met a guy at this investors group that I went to last week, and I just meet him. Right? I go up to him literally. Right. There's a group of 30, 35 dudes there. Right. I go up to the guy. Right. Multiple guys shake their hand. How are you? How you doing? Yeah. Good. A bit of small talk. And so what do you do? And I explained my story and bits and pieces. And I mentioned that we had a luxury holiday accommodation business and we just exited, you know, private company bought us and this thing. He goes, oh, that's what I do. I go, yeah, you know, we manage about 150 on the Gold Coast. You know, it was a decent sized business. You know, got a good exit. Blah blah blah. I'm like, what? Do you have a accommodation business? He goes, yeah. He goes, I'm the founder of Hometime. And I'm like, here we go. Like for those of you guys don't know what Hometime is, just do a quick Google. Well, they manage 2,500.
So you were having a flex at 150,
but again,
the water got very cold all of a sudden,
right? Yeah, the water got very cold, right? But what happened was we connected, right? And he's like, and then I started explaining what we do, and then Unemployable, he's like, I've heard about you guys. I'm like, oh, cool. And he's like, well, I stepped down as CEO of that business. I've got a fair bit of time, and I've created a new business, and that new business, there's a very, very strong strategic alliance with what his new business is doing and what we do at Unemployable, right? And after planting a couple seeds, right, today 9:14 a.m. hey Eric, his name, right, here, super cool to meet you on Thursday, mate, great evening with some awesome people. Very keen to catch up again soon. Let me know what works. Anyways, we're catching like back and forth. You text, we're catching up next week. And I haven't even told you about this yet, Adam, but there's a great opportunity with what he's doing and what we're doing at Unemployable as an example, right? So again, piecing idea, capital, execution, right? I'm always thinking, okay, how can we connect or who can I connect someone else with that can add value? Natalie, who was on the Freedom Summit, right? I connected with Natalie, just going, DMing her, going, hey, great presentation, amazing, would love to catch up. We were on a call yesterday. Well, that call leads to, she's now coming here August 14th and 15th. I've already booked her in for the podcast. We're doing a pod, and I booked out the morning of the 15th so we could do a strategy session on, again, how we can work together, right, through the podcast and what she's doing. And I've already got Jen that booked dinner, and we're going to take her out for dinner on the Friday night, and she's already sending me all this information. So these are the things that you need to start doing, right?
Just by now, the way, Eric, what you're saying, I'm sorry to cut you off, but I want the listeners not to miss, because you're watching Eric in his zone of genius here. Hmm. So this is Eric's zone of genius, which is connecting people, but he's now taken it one level higher by connecting people at scale now through a podcast. And that, especially with the changes in the YouTube rules last week, where they banned AI content from monetization, means that this kind of discussion is only going to be really had at scale by humans going forward. Well, there's going to be AI content, but there's going to be a clear delineation. Eric's superpower has always been connecting people, but now in this modern day and age, what you're seeing him do right now is talk to 25,000 people at once on a YouTube channel, and a year from now, it'll be 100,000 people at once. And that makes you an opportunity magnet, and look at the things that are coming out of it.
Eric, you're sticky. You're the glue. You're the glue that connects the idea, execution, and the capital together. And sometimes that's the most important part, right?
Correct. But you know what? What we're doing, right? Like she's flying from New Zealand to come here. So it's not like she just lives an hour down the road. She's going to book a flight. She's going to book an Uber. It's going to cost money for her to come here. We're going to, you know, book dinner. We're doing a pod. And this is the thing, you have to invest, right? There's been no talk about monetization, how it's going to work, what does the business look like. It's literally like, you trust me, I trust you, based on the relationship that Adam has created, right? However you guys met. And now we're going to take it to another level, and then I'll explain to Adam and see how all that works, right? But the key is, right, is you need to do the work. The work, what we're doing, right, is the work that... I was talking to someone a couple of days ago about the podcast and stuff, and they're like, oh my God, I didn't realize you guys had such a big team. I go, the funny thing is this, all you see is a video. That's all you see. You sit there for an hour and you watch a video. You don't know all the mechanics that happen in behind the scenes. So what we're creating here is 20, 21 months in the making of just doing hard things, showing up every single week, whether we like it, whether we don't like it, whether we're feeling a bit average or not a bit average, whether Mark is rushing to get there because he just got back from, you know, a night away, you know, these types of things, right? Like, this is what we're doing. We don't have to be doing this, but on the back end of this creates so much opportunity. And that opportunity is not just for us, it's opportunity for the viewers. These two things, right? Dave is an example, who's a gentleman's name that I'm going to be talking to. Right? What he's providing now, the business and the services he's providing, helps every single person that will watch this pod.
It's the ultimate looking back is how you connect the dots. Last month, we had over 2 million views of our content in 30 days, 100% organic without a dollar being spent. Yep. 2 million views in 30 days. Listen to that again, from a digital podcast here, or some of it's digital, some of it's in the studio. But the opportunities that come in, I got a phone call when I was in London on Sunday from one of our partners from the Freedom Summit, who is doing the onboarding for people opening accounts for the strategy that we talked about. And they're a brokerage company. And they said, we had the single biggest day in the history of our company the day after that event. We had... And they said, we've never seen anything like it. There was nearly 200 new accounts opened within 24 hours on their platform from the from the Freedom Summit that we did. I got an email from the chairman, Bill, from John Fawcett Foundation, a beautiful email, which I haven't shared yet publicly, but just saying, dude, like, that was extraordinary. $350,000 raised in 2 weeks, all yeah. from what we're doing. So sometimes the glue being the glue. So this really is an interesting thing to explore. I'm looking at what Mark's doing, and Mark, the opportunities that will come to Mark in time. It's just a matter of time before Interactive Brokers or someone like that contacts Mark and says, hey, Mark, can we sponsor your pod? Or he gets a call saying, hey, we're running an event in Kuala Lumpur, and can you speak next to this person? And like, that's how it works. It's learning to sort of put it together. And I learned this years ago when I went to Rick's retreat in Bali, when I was really struggling. I realized that this is going back to when I was 38 years old, I sort of pushed away what my superpower was, and I was almost embarrassed about it. But my superpower has always been bringing people together and talking and communicating. And once I embraced it, everything changed. When I met Richard Branson, he said to me, Adam, you got to throw more parties. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, that's been the secret to my success. He goes, I realized my superpower is bringing people together and having a good time. All the money I've made has come from bringing people together. Mm. He goes, I can't count. I'm illiterate. Not illiterate, but what's the word?
Dyslexic.
Dyslexic. I'm terrible with numbers, but I'm great with people. And Eric's a bit like that. And so it's just really understanding that and being curious and finding, and the young people listening, the tools available today are just extraordinary.
It's funny because, like, I always go back to that saying of know who you are and know who you're not. Like, I look at Adam and I say this, you know, multiple times on the pod, and I go like, I don't know another guy that can come up with an idea. You know, he's on both sides, right? Come up with an idea and execute so fucking fast. To the point where I look at him, I go, you fucking asshole, you make me feel bad, right? That I can't execute like you do. But again, he's successful in his own right, right? Mark, you're successful in your own right. You have your own superpower. James, myself, all of us on this panel are so different. It's not even funny how different we all are. And we all have different levels of success. So it's not comparing, you know, I'm not good at that. Everyone is good at something. You just got to find out what that is, right? Like, I'm not good in front of camera. I'm getting better in front of camera, right? Every day we're getting better and better and better. And then in 5 years' time, people are going to be like, man, you're amazing. Well, that takes time, right? I've done X amount of podcasts. That's why.
What were you going to say there, Mark? You're right.
Yeah, Eric. I was just going to share a little story, right? And it's, you know, Adam, you mentioned that you tried to run from your superpower for a long time. And sometimes we go through 20, 30, 40 years of our life not having any idea. I remember like it's at some low points in my life and career, I would walk down the street or run every day listening to this 6-minute video on repeat. And it was basically a YouTube video with all these public speakers, and it was kind of mashed together. And the arc of the video was, you know, everybody has a gift, and, you know, just if you just spend enough time looking for that gift and you practice that gift each and every day, that the whole world can open up to you. And I used to cry. Like, I used to listen to that walking down the street with tears in my eyes because I didn't know what my gift was, right? And you know, so it's not just running away from your gift. Sometimes we go years and years and years without finding it, whether that be through conditioning or bad childhood or whatever else happened. But I think it is true that every single person on this earth has a gift, and that gift might not be a financial gift. It might not be a gift that yields you financial results. It might yield you fulfillment and joy in so many other ways. But, you know, if we just listen hard and long enough and try and tap into that gift, I think there's no greater wealth or no greater fulfillment. So yeah, I'll post that in the comments. I'll post that little clip if anyone's out there kind of wanting a bit of, you know.
I'm going to post – thanks for sharing that, Mark. I'm going to post – sorry, not post. I'm going to explain something. So we've had, right, last 28 days, 44,300 hours of watch time. That is over 1,500 hours a day. So
just on YouTube.
I'm not even looking Spotify. I'm not looking at Apple, Instagram. So today, we've already had over 1,000 hours of people, right, watching us today. And that just keeps growing. That's over 2.6 million minutes in 28 days. Like, and we are tiny. That's the thing. We are tiny, right? When you look at bigger podcasts that have a million followers and subscribers in this thing. But when I look back, right, and I look back in our channel and I look at our first podcast that we did with with 2,000 views, it's taken, we've had 2,100 views in a year. It's been up. It's been up for 1 year and we've had 2,100 views.
We probably bought most of those.
And we probably, some of those were bought because again, we went down the vanity metrics, right? For the first 3-4 months, we're like, you know what? Wow, we got 50,000 views. Yeah, from Bangladesh. Yeah, good, you know? And then we got this type of thing. And then we went down the road of, you know what? No, we're doing it wrong. Let's do it the right way. And the right way is the fucking hard way. It's the organic chip away, one brick at a time, right? No get rich quick scheme, just showing up. And you need to decide who you are because not everyone is like that. Some are the get rich quick. Some are the people that want to pay to get there quickly. Some want the vanity metrics because you know what? The reality is that is an angle and that can work for you too. Right, not one that I would recommend.
You're talking about the get big quick rather than get rich quick. So you're talking about social media followers and publishers that are buying.
I mean, social media followers. Right now, I can, you know, I've got a mate that's got 600,000 followers, right? And he's told me he's paid for every single one of them, and he lives overseas. Like, but it's like 584,000 followers. I'm like, man, you got a lot of followers. I've bought every single one. But again, the perception is that that's, you know, oh, he's followed by a lot of people. But the thing is, again, just really, really getting back to the root of it is just know who you are, know who you're not, get very, very, very clear on that. And then basically work who you are in the ideal capital execution, find out what your superpower is, go out there and nail it. I had a very, very good coaching call with a client this week and he went to a networking event and I taught him how to frame himself. And I learned this from Adam and I taught him how to frame himself. And I said, so I had a call with him this week. I'm like, how did you go? He goes, man, honestly, it changed the whole evening. He goes, the first time I felt like a wanker when I was doing it. The second time, a little bit less. The third time, a little bit less. By the end of the night, people were coming up to me. I'm like, that's exactly what you want, right? You want to be the guy that they want to talk to. And you need to do that by framing yourself. And everybody has a story. That's one thing I have learned. Every single one of you guys here has some type of story, right? That is very, very, very valuable. And you guys need to believe it first, right? Because if you don't believe it, right? Like what Ross Cameron was saying when we recorded that pod yesterday, belief, self-belief, right? And he feels that there's no self-belief in the country anymore, right? So if you don't believe in the country, it's very hard to, you know, obviously stay here and with their beliefs, but you need to believe your own story before someone else can believe it, right? That is a reality. And a lot of us, and we talked about this before, Mark, right? Going, yeah, but that's so hard to do. And I haven't done that before. And, you know, because it's an identity piece. And I've battled with this for the last 21 months and I still battle with it to go, why am I worthy of getting attention?
I don't feel like
my story's not good enough.
I don't have kids, but if I did, this would be part of what I'd be teaching them is just really basic human skills of like how to introduce yourself, how to frame yourself. Because at the end of the day, I think Mark's is right in that there's going to be AI and there's going to be an engineering layer over the top. But access to that engineering layer in part is going to be still requiring human skills to connect with the people who hold the keys.
Human skills will be the jobs of the future because that's the thing that we're going to crave, the human touch. So those skills will be the jobs of the future.
But, I mean, this week I look at it, I'm like, I get a phone call from the guys at Nomad, you know, and they're like, Adam, could you come to KL? We'll pay for your return airfares from to and from anywhere in the world, 5 nights accommodation in a hotel, but you've got to hang out with the speakers and come to these private VIP events. And I'm like, oh, twist my arm, you know, like, you know, but I look at these opportunities that come in and it's that ability. And I think, how do these things come around? And I got a DM this week from this guy who's based in Europe, and he said, "Oh, Adam, how you doing? I just watched your pod." And I'm like, "I said, mate, I'm sorry, I feel like I've met you just looking at your photo, but I can't remember where I met you." And he said, "You came up to me in the line at the Louvre in Paris in Blockchain Week for the VIP dinner, and I was standing just a few meters from you, and you came over and said, 'I really like your hat.'" And I said, "Oh, that's right, I remember you now." And I'm like, holy shit, all I did was go to a dude and say, "Hey, dude, I love your hat." And we ended up talking for like half an hour as we're waiting in the line, then going in and then going downstairs. And he goes, "I've got this opportunity I want to come and talk to you about." It came from me simply being in the line and saying, "I like your hat," right? And it happened to be the VIP line. It was a $5,000 a plate dinner. So there's no dickheads there. And so I'm sitting there.
No poor dickheads, anyway.
There's no poor dickheads, yeah. When you pay $5,000, there are dickheads there. Yeah. Good point, Mark. Good point. But it was just a good reminder of like how basic it can be. Like, you know, like most people, because I watched this, everybody's just standing in the line like this, you know, like nobody knows anybody. I'm like, "Dude, I love your hat." Boom, open. Who knows where that's going to lead, but you know, it's.
You know what's funny? My kids, like, they're outgoing like me. They'll talk to anyone. Like, my 12-year-old right now is doing trials at the canteen, right, at her soccer, you know, and she's greeting people. Yeah, you know, like, I'm just like, it's amazing. But because they see me, right, like, at the beginning, right, when they were quite young, whenever I talk to someone or bump into someone and that I don't know, they're like, "How do you know them, Dad?" I'm like, "I don't." "Oh, why did you say hi?" But like they see it, and then I explain it to them, and then it happens again. Then it happens. Now it's just normal for them, and it'll be the same for them, right? I'm like, the one thing God gave you was a smile and a handshake and a voice, right? For I shouldn't say all of us, for the ones that are we're grateful enough that have it, right? Some people unfortunately don't have that, so we have to embrace that, right? A smile, a handshake, and a voice. The reality is most of us are scared shitless to use it.
Did you say your dad taught you that? Did you say your dad told you that?
My dad? No. Oh, just,
sorry.
I've just been always that
outgoing
person.
True.
Like it's right. But
learning that
the amount of people I have met, you know, and keep on meeting, like James, like giving it, like James, just like when he's like, "Hey, do you know?" "Yeah, I know that person." He's like, "You know, fucking everybody."
I'll give you an example. Last week, we went for a business meeting at the Mondrian Hotel, and the developers there who actually built the fucking thing, right? Two towers. He's worth a packet. Won't name his name. And he sold the residential side of the whole tower. Back then, it got valued at $250 million, and it just got revalued at $460. He kept the hotel side, and he rents it out to the anchor tenant in the Mondrian. I introduced him, and you could see they're in deep chat. I'm like, "That guy's got to be worth like fucking a lot of digits." And then, anyway, it said, "Oh, yeah." And I said, "I can just watch you over there." And just the gift of the gab. Next minute, "Hey, name is Eric. We'll catch up for that coffee next week. If you're ever in here, just let me know. I'll make sure they turn it on for you." It was like, fuck, that's how you do it.
And just like that, just because a mate of mine introduced me to him there. And we just, you know, he was asking interesting questions about, you know, me. And I was asking interesting questions about what he's done. And legit, like I just said, you know, again, right? This is just so easy. Here's the number. All right, cool. I didn't just take the number and forget about it. Like I texted him back and said, "Great meeting you. Look forward to connecting. I will message you next week, and it'll be great to catch up for that coffee. Again, congratulations. What you've done here is extraordinary. Like, well done, you know, yeah, like kudos to you."
What you're doing there, Eric, is seeing people. And yeah, I always say this on Instagram, yeah, teach your kids to see people, because yeah, so many people just need to be seen. Yeah. And you can practice in a low stakes environment. Like every day when I'm traveling, I try to have two times during the day where I've seen someone and just, and because I get such a kick out of it. I'll just tell you really quickly. One was at the Nero coffee shop in London in Mayfair. This girl at the counter, she was beautiful big smile, and I said, "You have the best smile. Oh my god, you just got a ripper." And she was a large black girl, and she was so nice, and I could just see she just lit up, and she was like, "Oh my," she goes, "I should work in this store more often. The customers here are so nice." And then she couldn't do enough for me. And then later in the afternoon, I was walking back to my hotel. There's a homeless guy on the street, And last time I was in London a few weeks ago, it was the same guy. And I said to him, I said, I remember you. I said, you're from Adelaide. And he looks up at me and he's like, he goes, I remember you. You bought me a cup of tea. And I was like, I did. I bought you a cup of tea and a sandwich down the road. I said, mate, I got no cash on me, but it's just good to see you again. How are you? And we sat and spoke for a while. And you could just see the guy was just lit up. And it was right in the middle of Piccadilly Circus. Everyone else was just walking by and he had his swag out and he's ready about 6 o'clock at night. But if you just practice, at the end of the day, you get to notch up these wins of, I saw two people today that were just dying to be seen. And it can be so simple. Just find the courage to say, you have such an amazing smile, or you know, something, a sincere compliment, you know, bro. It's such a life hack, and it opens up incredible opportunities. And I'll do that whether I'm standing at the Louvre with rich people or whether I'm seeing a homeless guy on the street. And that came from my mom. And if you learn that skill, it's amazing, you know.
James has been using it, but he's been using it in the wrong way. Like, I've seen him multiple times. You know, he'll be like, you've got an ass. I'm like, that's not the way you do it. That's
not the way you do it, man. Eric, you don't know you don't see the results in the back end. Excuse the pun.
The question is, Eric, is it ever women joke, or is it just the guys?
Again, that joke from last week sort of I've changed my whole tune on that too, Eric. Adam. It's no longer the entrance.
Funny. Isn't it funny that in a world where it's going to be massively disrupted by money printing, central bank digital currencies, AI and everything else, that the antidote and the secret and the best thing that you can do to kind of succeed in that world is to just be human.
Mm. Man, it's exactly what we're doing this weekend, Mark, right? Like, I didn't know Mark. I knew of Mark prior to Unemployable. I seen Mark around at a few of the events and bits and pieces, right? Obviously, we've been building a relationship. And we went out for a couple dinners. And so this weekend, right, I said to Jen a couple of weeks ago, I said, I want to start hanging out with Mark and Dom more. Can you, but I'm busy, right? Mark and I are going to be hopeless at organizing. You and Dom, right? Can you get something organized, right? And so this weekend, literally, me and my family are going to Mark and Dom's house. We're staying with them at their house. And we're going to be cooking up pizzas and hanging out. The girl's going to be hanging out. And the real reason why I'm going is because I want to try and give Mark some money so he can trade for me. That's a real reason. But I'm trying to pretend to build a relationship. But no, but honestly, like, this is what we're doing.
Take some organic hand cream, mate. You can probably get it from 10 to 20 grand in the pot.
Right. But instead of just saying, hey, we should catch up. Yeah, we should. And then a year goes by.
Correct.
Right. Like, social masturbation. Trusting me and my family. Yeah. Right. To go and stay at his house and just hang and do real human shit. You know, like, this is what people need to start doing more of. Adam, you are amazing at it. Like, I went to this poker thing on Thursday. I'm like, you know what? I've got the poker table here. Right. And I look at it every day. And I'm like, I've had the organized shit here. I'm like, I got to organize a poker night here for 10 dudes and come and hang out and who knows what the connections can be made here. But again, it's just having it put in your calendar, making sure that you're actually trying. And I like what you said, Mark, you know, just do human things. Like, it's
so good.
Pretty basic.
And I want to leave the chat. We got to wind this one up, guys, but I want to leave the challenge for you out there this week listening. Two things: try to see someone every day. Like, really see them and give them a sincere compliment, no matter who they are, and just watch the effect. But trust me, it'll be you that is the beneficiary as well. Mm. And secondly, don't try to catch yourself when you say, oh, we should catch up, right? I put something on my socials this week about, you know, the four agreements. And I said, that was great. Yeah, number one is be impeccable with your word. Don't say that shit if you don't mean it. Just stop. Mm. Like, if you don't, you know, I'll have to catch up sometime. If you're really saying, nice to see you, we don't have anything in common anymore, bye, have a nice life, just don't say anything. But don't fucking don't send the message to your subconscious that you just spew horse shit all day. And if you do say, let's catch up sometime, like, really do that, right? Like, be impeccable with your word. Because it changes, it's so simple, but it changes your life. And I mean, so many ways. You look at the event last week, it was just a that result of 600 people turning up and 350,000, all that is being impeccable with your word for years and years and years and showing up and giving and being there for people. And it all comes back at once. And then the opportunities that fall out of that are just, there is an abundance of opportunities, you know? So that's all it is in life. Just keep showing up. Look at, none of us here are that smart. None of us here are that, like honestly, we're mids, right? Like we are mids that are
really doing Sudoku, high level Sudoku at 9 p.m. at night in bed.
We're just dumb enough to know how to get together and be decent humans. And if that's you as well, we're just mids that stuck at it and mastered the people game and the talk and the networking game and knowing what we're good at. Like we're not super smart by any stretch. So I hope that gives a bit of hope to everyone out there. Just remember that, you know, we're just you plus time. That's it. We're you plus time. And yeah, let's keep going.
I think a good starting place, Eric, for you might be Snap instead of Sudoku. If you want to practice
or Uno, maybe some Uno. That's more
out. That way too complex.
Oh, I'm a killer at Guess Who. I rock Guess Who.
Hey, oh. Eric can start with this game. You know, the slaps.
I'm really good at, does she have glasses? No.
Okay. She's in. She stays in.
Does she have long hair? No. Is it Janet? I'm the one that there's still 10 of them up, and I'm like, is it Janet?
Oh, well, at least you can count, Eric. At least you can count. Yeah. All right, boys.
I now know that if you put a dollar in, and I put a dollar in, and James puts a dollar in, and Mark puts a dollar in, that it makes no difference.
It doesn't come down quicker.
The exponential results are like night and day. We had this conversation last week. I really fucked up, and I said, yeah, you did. I watched it back, and Adam said, Eric, I didn't think you had a brain fart. I went, you just had a brain fart. And
I watched it back. For those of you guys that don't know, I had a brain fart and I said something that was really, really stupid. But this is good because this is being vulnerable and being authentic, right? We all make mistakes. But I watched it back because the best thing was just the pause that each of one of you guys had. You guys got to watch it back. And then it was kind of like,
Did he just say that? No, Eric.
No, it doesn't. And I'm like, oh, sorry, guys.
Well, he's counting his millions on his fucking like.
Oh, well, there you go.
Eric, how about we do this, right? How about you put in a million, we'll put in 100,000, and then we'll go four ways.
Yeah. And, you know what?
And you'd probably still be happy with the result. That's cool.
You guys always talking about these candles, you know, oh, look at the candles. I already got Jen to buy 12 of the candles. We got them lit up in the back. I'm just going, wrong. We're the only ones without candles at home. I said,
you
got to buy some
candles. You got to learn how to read candles.
Where's Eric?
Is this a... pull the cord, right. Adam. Pull the cord.
All right, you retards. We're out of here. Guys, thank you for watching. We'll see you next week. Remember to like and subscribe. We appreciate you guys, and thanks for watching. Bye for now.
Hey there. I hope you enjoyed that episode of Unemployable. If you'd like to watch another episode, just click there.